Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes and I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, July 2nd, 2021. The 183rd day of the year, and we are grateful as always for everyone who's listening, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free due to the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. The website where you can access that material free without even having to put your name on a mailing list or pay in any way is whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. And if you scroll down through that page, there's all kinds of resources, including the actual worksheet process itself. Simple click on a PDF file, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. And a whole host of audio files that you can get free access to from the past 10 years of this show. Some of them have been curated out by Jeannie, and they represent highlight shows, shows where people have been stepped through the tools, shows where people have talked about their positive benefits of using the tool, shows where people have called in and clarified what's the dynamic that allows this process, which is so seemingly simple, deceptively simple, to be so powerful. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, the app will download and you'll get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, and now access to the Commitment Tool. And then anywhere you have your smartphone, you'll have access to this powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tool that I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and relationships, and turn any experience of a negative emotional state into part of that infallible guidance system that each one of us have been gifted with. Today is the 183rd day of the year, and we are working through the Course in Miracles workbook lessons. And this is one of those lessons that I don't really want to read the commentary to. So I'll just read the lesson itself. Says, I call upon creation's name and on my own. And the lesson, it literally says, I call upon God's name and on my own. And the first paragraph says, God's name is holy, but no holier than yours. To call upon God's name is but to call upon your own. And that's all I'm going to read of that commentary. The Course in Miracles itself is available absolutely free at acim.org. And you can read the course, you can read the lessons, so it's available free online. So I will take us right over to Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment. Her title for lesson 183 is Call Me by Your Name. And she quotes Rilke as saying, "Nearby is the country they call life. You will know it by its intensity. Give me your hand." As in, we'll walk there together. That's how I interpret that. And Pam writes, "Self-help tomes have advised using willpower to cajole us to get to the gym, to deal with epic work deadlines, to prevent us from checking Facebook for the 34th time, etc. And strength, inner resolve, and these other qualities, we're told, these will spur us on to glory." Organizational psychologist Benjamin Hardy, he says, quote, "Willpower is a dangerous fad that leads to failure," close quote. Lesson 183, I call upon Source, that's Pam's interpretation of that lesson, seconds Hardy's assessment. "When I say I should be more present, I should be more accepting, I should be more loving, I enlist the enculturated brain that caused the problem in the first place. So instead, I call on the name of Source. I become oblivious to everything else. That becomes my only wish, the only sound with any meaning, the sound of the name of Source, the idea of connecting to my Source. Its unlimited name pulses through my body. It's as near as my every breath. With it, I escape all bondage of the world. It's the only prayer I need." So the reason I'm choosing to go in that direction is that this commentary by Pam Grout falls right in line with what Dr. Michael Rice talks about when he talks about the difference between will as one of the faculties, one of the spiritual faculties, and the difference between will and willpower. And I believe that this little segment from Pam Grout talking about how when I try to use strength, I try to use perseverance, I try to use logic, I'm enlisting the same part of the brain that caused the problem in the first place. Willpower is that put your nose to the grindstone and beat yourself up for every mistake and motivate yourself through punishment. And the spiritual faculty of will is a capacity that each of us have that with practice we can strengthen. And and the reason I'm not reading more of the commentary from the Course in Miracles on this lesson is because my brain keeps saying, okay, you're telling me to call on the name of God, so what's God's name? And then I flash on some experiences I've had with people in the past who have been told to meditate on the names of God for 2 hours a day, and that's all they need. And yet those people, many of them that I met, were still as troubled, as racked with anxiety and anger and depression as anybody else who wasn't meditating 2 hours a day. So the application of that process wasn't enough, wasn't as useful. So the essence of this lesson for me is asking to be shown rather than relying on my conscious logical mind or these skills that I might have developed. So in the spirit of take whatever works for you from the Course in Miracles, and if you run into something that hits you sideways or doesn't seem to fit, move on to the next part. And that's part of why I'm not going to read any more of the commentary from this today's lesson. But lesson 183, the way Pam Grout summarizes it is, I call upon Source, and that's the only prayer I need. So, we have 48 minutes left. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? It's a very light day on the switchboard. I've had all kinds of reading earlier today. Here is Susan. Welcome, Susan. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Kim. This is a possibly interrupted day, but I'm here now. So, that's very interesting about you. I can see you saying, well, what the heck is God's name? Give me a hint, you know. in Eastern traditions, they often say, call upon the name of God. So that seems very Eastern, and maybe it's just not, it certainly doesn't seem Christian. They would say call upon Jesus or call upon Mary or call upon God, but God would be God's name then. So that's, I liked how you just decided that it sounded as if that was a trigger for you, but it was a rather mild one and you had dealt with it, and so you were just going to do a bypass. You just weren't going to deal with it.
Well, I'm going to try and get to the essence of it in a way that works for me.
Right? Yeah.
And so I'm saying I call upon Source, or I ask to be shown, or I acknowledge, you know, there's a wonderful story from Guy Finley, and the punchline of it is that this woman, after years of trying to do what she thinks the powers that be want, she finally demolishes everything she's done and lays on the ground and passes out with the words, I don't know what you want from me. And when she wakes up, the spring is flowing by her head, it's the spring that if you drink from it, you have enlightenment, et cetera. And that's the idea, is my conscious logical mind can't figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
My conscious logical mind, as in the Pam Grout segment today, is the part of my brain that's created the problem. It's exactly
right.
Why in Michael Rice's worksheet, I map out in the first three steps what my conscious logical mind is telling me is causing my upset, and then I cancel, and what my mind tells me has to happen to fix it, and then I cancel all of that and ask to be shown something else. So rather than get caught up reading the words from the commentary in the workbook lesson that just make my head spin, I'm going to go for the same result in a way that makes sense, that resonates energetically with me, that has been serving me so well for so many years. You know, this Michael Rice worksheet, I just cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need to make up another story out of these brain cells to hallucinate the proof that my fear and based story and my reality is true. I cancel my need for anyone or anything to change, including myself. I put my conscious logical mind on the shelf for now. All that stuff, to me, is the essence of today's workbook lesson.
Mm-hmm. So good.
Instead of trying to figure it out, I do a worksheet and ask to be shown.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of trying to figure it out, I do a mind shifter targeted journaling and let all of my unconscious material about this spill out onto the paper. That, to me, is the same as calling on the name of the Creator.
It's so good, yeah.
It's putting the conscious logical mind aside and saying, I don't know what you want from me. You know, how can I be a blessing in this moment to myself and others? What's mine to do here? Rather than keeping my nose to the grindstone and trying to use my conscious logical mind to come up with another solution.
Mm. You know, I've been sending the lessons to my son and one of my grandsons every day at their request. And I read both of them now in the morning and decide which one would be the most accessible to them. And it's been Pam Grout a lot of the time. So I just put in the subject line, Grout version of lesson, whatever it is. And I haven't heard from either one of them which they like better, but I know what you mean. Sometimes, just oftentimes, the Grout one is just more accessible. And but I had a question.
All right.
Unrelated. I've been doing worksheets regularly, and a lot of them on my son and my grandson Charlie with the OCD. And when I do the patter, very often I go back to a set of similar or set of same memories of my own. And I usually come out with some new information or a new insight, but it seems as if my memories of early conflict, there aren't that many different kinds. There are many episodes of the same kind, but I guess I should do a worksheet on being afraid that the effectiveness of going back to those memories is going to wear off, or as if I should be discovering something new each time or remembering something new each time.
Well,
yeah.
I would encourage you to, once you recognize the should, drop the should.
Yeah. Okay.
Because that, again, is your conscious logical mind trying to work things out.
Okay.
And I've told this story before, that the idea that I have done worksheets and I've done NET sessions and over again, it goes back to this period of time in my life when I was 3 or 4 or 5 years old. And
yeah.
Nothing, you know, no big trauma, no watching a car accident, people being decapitated, there's no death of grandparents on top of each other, and nothing. It's all about a similar kind of a dynamic between my father and I that we're supposing happened, that the NET and that the associations that come up when I do the worksheet process keep repeating. And at one point in time, when I had a partner I was doing the NET with every week for 11 years. And at one point in time, she got to the point where she said, something's not working. You keep going back to the same thing. And I was sitting there with the very different experience that every time I went there, it was through a different kind of an association in my current life, right? A different dynamic between me and some other person. And or I got a slightly different flavor of what I was responding to emotionally, and it would take me back there, and I would just say, okay, there's another layer, another aspect. And many of the times, I didn't get any big aha experience. I just got the release, the time to breathe and say, show me, and whatever comes up is fine and comes up. And yet the person who was doing that work with me from the outside was expecting something. Well, you should this or that.
That's like me. Yep.
Right. And my answer to her was, yeah, but my life is getting better, even though I'm not getting this big aha experience from these worksheets or from this NET.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you catch yourself in the should, please feel free to stop shoulding all over yourself.
Right, okay. Yeah, that's good. Another thing that occurred to me when doing the worksheets is we go back to a time when we were not equipped with discerning capabilities. For instance, I've had many a fantasy of facing off with my mom and grabbing the switch out of her hand and saying, this is the wrong thing to do to a kid. You should not be doing this, and I'm going to break it right here in front of your face. Well, I never did anything like that. But if I had, it would have made a huge difference. What I'm saying, though, is not that I should have, but that I didn't, and kids don't. Kids are, maybe that's the true definition of a victim, or you can correct me on this. We go back to a time when we were a victim of situations and didn't have the tools or discernment or physical or mental power to differentiate.
Okay,
enough
so
to
but
say
let's look at this differently. There's so much wrapped up in that word victim. Right? There's so much emotion,
really.
There's so much, you know, implied definition, et cetera. One of the most important things that I've discovered since, you know, taking my 25 or 30 years of therapy experience and adding it to the Dr. Michael Rice tools is the concept that if I just eliminate that word victim from my vocabulary and my thought process, and I substitute, I mean, this is not about being in denial. This is about just choosing a different way to describe it, think about it, feel it, experience it. So if I, instead of saying I was a victim of the economic downturn, or I was a victim of childhood sexual abuse, or I was a victim of, you know, X, Y, or Z emotional abuse, in full acceptance of what has occurred, if instead of saying I was a victim of this or that, I say I experienced this or that.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
The feeling I get, how it resonates in me, changes almost instantaneously. And I'm talking about the very same life experiences and memories and emotions.
Right.
And then rather than loading my mind up with all of that, the implied definition and powerlessness in that term, victim or victimhood, I'm somebody, I'm a spiritual being having a physical experience who experienced this, that, or the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes the impact on me and then puts me in a position where I can start to look at, accept, and work with what meaning I chose from that experience and whether or not I'm going to keep the same meaning that I downloaded in the beginning or change it and choose to respond differently from now on. And yes, many of the times, this is why Dr. Michael Rice talks about his power person dynamic, and he says, look, the power person dynamic has these three fundamental requirements. One of them is, I'm dealing with somebody who has a lot more power over my life than I do. At whatever point in time that is, whether I'm a child, which is most often, or maybe I'm in boot camp for a military tour. So yes, you're right on something, right? You're describing this idea that as children, we don't have the physical prowess and the mental and emotional maturity to step up and grab the switch from mom or dad and say, this is not a right thing to do to a kid. So you're describing something that's accurate, but when you use the word victim, perhaps in your mind, but certainly for most of us in this culture, it's loaded with all kinds of emotions and meanings that leave the person feeling powerless in other ways that they aren't exactly powerless, because each of us downloads our impressions and beliefs about that thing, our interpretations of those life events that are interacting with our core strength as a person and our previous life experience. You know, we can have identical twins that experience something, and one of them takes one meaning from it, and the other one takes a very different meaning from it. So I find it's quite beneficial when I start thinking in terms of or speaking in terms of being a victim, if I instead talk about all the same stuff, but say it from the perspective of, I experienced this.
That's very good.
I like that.
And then many of these tools talk in one way or another about, okay, so this event happened, and I downloaded this meaning. What did I create as a meaning for myself, about the world I live in, about my safety, et cetera, based on that
right.
experience? You know, Byron Katie says, I only suffer when I believe my negative thoughts.
Right.
So if I download a belief that's negative about myself, I initiate suffering. Diedrich Wolfsack says, hey, look, our core beliefs drive our behaviors. Every time a core belief gets activated, that core belief chooses what emotion we're feeling. And we're going to be acting in that moment. Not from the truth of the situation, not from our full capability, but we're acting from a false negative belief that we downloaded at some prior time in our life, usually
mm-hmm.
within the first
yeah.
6 to 8 years of life.
Mm-hmm.
So these
That's
events
so
happened. What did you make it mean about you? We've talked about you've given us the gift on this show of talking about a time you remember when you were 5 or 6 years old and your mother was with the riding crop hitting your sister and you're watching her, you know, cry and run in place and scream as her legs are getting hit. And your interpretation of that, you said to us, listen, every time I think about that, I think about my poor mother. She got saddled with two such bratty kids that she had to beat them for them to behave. That's a meaning that you downloaded that did
mm-hmm.
not come from the act of your mother hitting you with that crop.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And that's every bit as unproductive as a child who downloads the meaning that says, my mother is a monster. Because then that belief, every time it's activated in me, is going to prompt a certain kind of thought, emotional response, and action from me. And if it's negative, it's going to be counterproductive whenever it's called into activity. Are you breathing?
I'm breathing. This is.
Do we have another comment or question related to that?
Not really.
That leads you to something else, or is there another unrelated question you want to pose or comment you want to make?
Well, there was something about the ACIM reading this morning, the Course in Miracles reading itself. Something like it said, Think not God hears the little prayers of those who call upon him with the names of idols. And I was thinking, okay, rewording, God doesn't hear the little prayers of those who call upon him with the names of idols. And I just thought, that can't be true. I trust God hears every prayer and will come to meet a person. If the person is calling on an idol, it's a mask for God. God's standing right behind there. And I can't imagine God wouldn't try to kind of come around that idol and meet the person or find the person or answer the person somehow anyway. So I just got stuck on that, and I thought I would ask you about that if you had any thoughts.
Well, the thought is that this I just flashed on this idea that when I was in a lot of intense conversations with somebody from the Christian Science Church, and they heard one of these readings or A Course in Miracles or something I was quoting from the mirror theory, they got all triggered because one of their core precepts is God already knows everything you need and has already provided it. So when you're asking for something, you're off the mark in the first place.
Whoa.
Right? And so that's the kind of thing that just got resonated in my mind as you ask this question. And so the wording in The Course in Miracles, you know, when it resonates that thought in you that God's ignoring someone's prayers, be assured, because it, you know, at several different levels, if it resonates tension or fear in you, it's a misinterpretation on your part of what's intended from The Course in Miracles.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it says here,
yeah,
thus do we give an invitation which can never be refused, and God will come and answer that invitation himself. And here's the part that you quoted. Think not he hears the little prayers of those who call on him with names of idols that are cherished by the world. In other words, he's not going to bring you what you ask for if it's related to some idol that's cherished by the world, because he, she, it, the creation knows that's only going to be detrimental to you. Creation, God, light, love, is only always and forever bringing to you what is necessary for your full fulfillment, and everything that's less than that is a creation of the distorted perception, the illusion of perception. Another place in The Course in Miracles, it says perception was made as an attack on God. So the truth is that the Creator, God, light, love, all it is, is always there, is always providing exactly what you need. And so when you're busy asking for something as though you don't have it, it's a missed perception. And so the way I would read that paragraph is, don't think that God's going to bring you the new Mercedes that you're begging for, because you don't really need a new Mercedes. What you need is the awareness that that idol you're creating in the place of your peace is detrimental to your recognition of your perfect peace and your perfect safety.
Mm.
And so what's always in your highest and best interest is always being created at one level and provided for you by the creation. And so don't sweat the little things, and don't worry about whether or not you get everything that your mind tells you to ask for. You know, Michael Rice talks about prayer is not putting your order into the cosmic gift catalog.
I love that, yeah.
Right? He says prayer, the ancient Aramaic definition for prayer, is something much more like creating a trap for God. Another way to say it is aligning your receiver to be able to be in tune with the creative energy and its wisdom and its insight and intuition that can help you understand the many ways in which you already are whole and complete, and nothing of value can be taken from you, and nothing of value can be added unto you. So that's the kind of thing that resonates for me when you pick up those words from the Course in Miracles workbook commentary and say, this seems wrong to me. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, when I read that, I understood what they meant, but I just didn't like the words and thought others might be misled. I wanted to have a fight with the author. So anyway, a little teeny fight.
Well, it just reminds me of the time that I was reading the autobiography of a yogi after years of refusing to read it for whatever triggered emotional reasons. And I was loving it, just loving it. And all of a sudden, about halfway through the book or two-thirds of the way through, I just got a sick feeling in my stomach and wanted to throw the book across the room. But because of all of this work, because of all the worksheets, because of having worked for years to take more and more 100% responsibility for whatever emotions I'm creating, I realized, oh, this has got to be me and old stuff. So I put it down and did some EFT tapping and did a couple worksheets, and I got in touch with it. This was just garbage about all of that. Catholic kindergarten, grade school, high school, and college indoctrination that was clashing with the, you know, the reported life story from Paramahansa Yogananda. And once I saw that and did a few worksheets on it, I went back and finished reading the book and had a delightful time, and no nausea and no sick feeling and no anger. So I would encourage you, if you have a story like that, or a response like that that comes up in reading a Course in Miracles lesson, that would be a better course of action than trying to ask somebody else, what do you think this means?
Okay.
What was your question for me?
Oh,
are you wondering about what was so triggering in the Paramahansa Yogananda book?
Yeah, what was so sickening to you? But it's really none of my business. But
it's fine. It was the part of the book where he was starting to talk about his guru, and his guru basically able to do things like walk on water and bilocate and having dropped the body, create a body to come back and have a conversation and even a physical hug with Paramahansa Yogananda. And that was clashing with everything I'd been taught about how, you know, Jesus is the one true God and the Son of God and the only one capable of all these miracles. And that's what it was. And when I did the worksheet on it, I got, you know, flashes into here I was in grade school and we were reading the Baltimore Catechism, and it would have contradictory phrases from one page to the next, and I would ask about it and I'd get my knuckles slapped with a ruler. You know, don't ask a question. This is what we're teaching you. Don't challenge us. And it would say one thing, and like on one page it would say, you know, God is beyond our ability to know. And then the next page would say, God wants you to do this. And I'd say, well, how do you know God wants you to do that if God's beyond your ability to know? Those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
those are some of the things that came up when I did worksheets, when I was doing the, you know, trying to figure out why all of a sudden I had this sick feeling in my stomach when I was reading the book Autobiography of a Yogi. And then when I did a few of those worksheets and I saw, oh, yeah, this is that really powerful religious indoctrination that said everybody who's not Catholic, everybody that doesn't believe exactly the way we do, they're going to hell.
I remember.
And then I went back and was able to read the book and delight in it, and the sick feeling was not there. I was calm and cool and collected and enjoyed the book and read it again. And so my offering for you is that rather than asking several different people, what do you think they really mean here? And do you think they mean that God isn't going to answer these prayers? And rather than doing that, if you have the constriction in your energy system or any negative emotion or upset, do the worksheet process on it.
Good advice.
Because that tension, that upset is still in you to get resonated the next time something is interpreted by you in a way that resonates with that material that you're holding, that you're carrying in your energy system.
It reminds me of a joke, Dr. Tim. Maybe you know this joke. Do you know the joke about the chain bridge?
It's not ringing a bell with that little bit of input.
Okay. Well, that's not giving it away, and I have to be careful because I ruin jokes all the time. But there's this man who's a seeker of enlightenment, and he hears that there's this great guru, this great sage, enlightened man on the top of a certain mountain. So he climbs the mountain, and he climbs for days, and he's, you know, he goes through great hardship. I'll make the long story short. It's one of those yarns that could go on and on. He finally gets to the guru, and he says, Honorable Sir or Divine Sage or whatever he says, what is the meaning of life? And the sage says, life is like a chain bridge. And the man says, life is like a chain bridge? What? And the sage sits up straight and opens his eyes wide and says, you mean it isn't like a chain bridge? I think I told it right. yeah.
That's a good one. That's a bit subtle, but a very good one, yes.
Well,
so
I don't want to agree
with you that the Course in Miracles lesson is saying that God is not going to listen to your prayers. I'm not going to agree with you in that interpretation.
Thank you. I don't interpret God. I think God listens all the time and is very, very, very available. And we're the ones that don't remember that God is available. If we remember, then we're in better shape. So, by the way, a small report on my son. I sent him the link for your Zoom meeting last night, which is a little bit intervening and acting like a overbearing mother perhaps, but I just said, hey, you know, there's that meeting tonight if you're interested, and sent him the link. This morning we went for a walk and I said, did you go on? And he said, I looked at that, I thought about it, but I was making dinner and the kids were around, it just wasn't possible. So but I just have hopes, and you know, I just have hopes, and I gotta do the worksheets on having hopes that would be the way he finds his way. But in spite of appearing or not appearing or doing worksheets or not, he is finding his way. And I have been practicing doing nothing and saying very little, only when asked, for the most part, and just going for long walks, where he ends up saying, wow, that was really helpful. I feel a lot better. And one insight he had, which makes his decision about remaining a surgeon and a doctor much more difficult, is how he loves when he's operating and it's going well and it's a challenging operation, maybe something new, some problem he hasn't seen before or nobody else has either. He's creative, and he says he'll get into a zone, a state when he's completely calm, focused, and confident that whatever he's doing is the right thing. And he says, it's an amazing feeling, but I have to go through so many mental barriers to getting there sometimes. But being in the surgery is his favorite thing and his creative thing. And yet in every other way, almost every other way, he feels as if he cannot go back into that hospital situation that's so chaotic, frenetic, demanding, overscheduled, lots of pressure, everything running late, and that's a big trigger for him, is causing people to wait, feeling as if he has to rush. So there's that. There's like this jewel at the very center of his being a doctor. And he said, that's one of the reasons I can't quite yet say goodbye to the whole vocation that I had there. I just would miss that so much, and I can't imagine any other way. He talks about music. He said life should have a soundtrack, and he says that's not an original idea with me, but he has a lot of music going in his head. He's a good singer, and he just comes from a musical family and has that in there. He says it's like listening to a great symphony or something, to be operating and knowing I'm in that groove where it's completely right. So that's just information. If you have a thought or an insight about that, I'd love it.
Well, Stealing Fire comes to mind. And Stealing Fire is the title of a book.
Okay.
And and so, you know, like the at one level, the thing you're describing is like a drug of choice. He gets this relief when he finds that space, when he's in that zone.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And the reason I think about that is that so here's the introduction, the never-ending story. Some revolutions begin with a gunshot, others with a party. This one kicked off on a Friday night in downtown Athens in 415 BCE. A prominent Greek general and politician had invited a small circle of friends to his villa for what was to become one of the more infamous bacchanals in all of history. Hooded in the stolen robes of a high priest, this general swept down his marble staircase, recited a forbidden incantation, and produced an ornate decanter. Carefully, he poured a single shot of this dark liquid into each of his guests' glasses. A few more words, an exuberant cheer, and everyone drained their cups. In less than an hour, the effects took hold. This quote is, "Fears, terrors, quiverings, mortal sweats, and a lethargic stupor came and overwhelmed us." This was what the historian Plutarch later recounted. "But as soon as we were out of it, we passed into the delightful meadows where the purest air is breathed, where sacred concerts and discourses are heard, where, in short, one is impressed with celestial visions." By sunup, those visions had faded, and they were replaced by the repercussions in the real world. The general's illicit party had kicked off a chain of events that would prompt him to flee Athens, dodge a death sentence, betray his government, and set in motion the trial and execution of his beloved teacher, Socrates. So there's a high price to pay for that buzz and that high, right? When you're doing it with stealing stuff to get it and ingesting all of these chemicals, et cetera. The point of this book is, that look at what your son goes through. Look at the price he's paying to get that high, right? That being in the zone, that tapping into his creativity, that feeling like he's in the right place. Look at what it's doing. He's willing to subject himself to worse, basically, than this general.
Mm.
Because it's your son whose health is getting sacrificed. In this case, it's just Socrates, the guy's teacher that was going to get sacrificed, and his career as a general. But anyway, what the book is about is what you might call biohacking, what you might call finding other ways to get that that experience of being in the zone, in the flow, in the rhythm, right? Athletes mm-hmm. call it, you know, being in the flow, being in the zone, hitting your stride, whatever. And this is a whole book about different ways to do it, with diet, with exercise or extreme exercise, with meditation, with music, et cetera. And one of the parts of the book, it talks about how, do you know about free diving?
Where, no.
Where people, they suck air into their lungs and they expand their lung capacity and then they go and they dive without any apparatus.
Oh, wow.
And they dive to deeper and deeper levels and they get a buzz.
Oh, my God.
And the thing about it is it's like one of the most wonderful things in the world. It's one of the greatest highs, et cetera. And it turns out that many of these people die because they just keep pushing the limits, even though they've had near-death experiences and you know, almost blah, blah, blah. They just keep going back to do it because they can't get that feeling anywhere else in the world. And there was this free diver who had been, you know, near death a couple times and was pushing the limits, and somebody came and educated the diver about how what you're going for is this euphoric experience, and there are ways to get it without risking your life. And it was a boon to that diver because then he or she, I forget whether it was a female or a male, was then able to get the fix of that rush without having to risk their lives. And that's what this book is about. What are the different ways? How do the Navy SEALs use it? What is this being in synchronization with other minds? What is this getting in the flow? What is this tapping into the higher faculties of the human brain? And how do we do it with diet, exercise, extreme exercise, meditation, music, etc.? Sometimes, you know, microdosing of psychedelics or ayahuasca or whatever. And that's a big trend that's been, you know, expanding in our world. And this book, Stealing Fire, is about that. And so maybe your son could benefit by finding other ways to get that flow state feeling than being in that really, really intense abusive environment just so he can be in the operating room from time to time.
And it's got that other element to it of his wish to be able to help other people. So he would have to, because he's a good surgeon and he does do good work in there, and I think he there's just that other side of it. This is he wants to have that buzz, but he also wants to help other people and is helping other people.
Well,
he gets
that buzz when he helps other people.
Yeah,
that's a part of the buzz. And mm-hmm. so, you know, in this book or some other articles I've written, people like Richard Branson, they decide to create that flow state once or twice every day. And so this is about figuring out what it takes. This is very much in line with Dr. Michael Rice's primary and secondary purpose. You know, purpose, personal power, and commitment is the two-hour lecture. And when you have created, based on, you know, the skills that you have and the things that drive your passion, when you've created your secondary purpose and you're in pursuit of that and fulfilling that, it's that flow state, right? It's that buzz like no other. So there's all kinds of different ways to talk about it, but there are probably ways for your son to satisfy that craving to be of assistance to others and to get in that flow state that don't require him to sacrifice his health, physical and mental, perhaps even spiritual, just so he can be in the operating room from time to time.
Mm.
Just a thought.
Ah.
lot to think about.
And an interesting book to read.
Thanks. I wrote it down. Thanks.
I suppose I didn't talk about the author. Stephen Kotler, K-O-T-L-E-R, and Jamie Weil, W-H-E-A-L. Stealing Fire, How Silicon Valley, the Navy SEALs, and Maverick Scientists Are Revolutionizing the Way We Live and Work.
Wow. Kotler or Kohler?
Kotler, K-O-T-L-E-R.
Got it. Okay. Thanks.
Well, you're entirely welcome and deserving. Got something else you want to charge us up with for the next couple of minutes?
No, Dr. Tim. Anybody else on the phone line?
Jeannie is on, but nobody else has a hand up.
Okay.
She's on the switchboard and turned her microphone on, but she hasn't clicked in to say hello yet.
Hello.
Hi, Jeannie.
I've been listening. Yeah, awesome discussion. I would like to just add one thing to the very first of your all's conversation when you were talking about what's the name of God. And I've shared this before, but I went to a conference one time. I took a bunch of youth from our church to it. And one of the speakers was, I don't know if he was Hebrew or Arabic or what, but he said in their native language, the name of God was like the breath. It was like, huh. And so then he went on to say, so when you're born and you take your first breath, are you alive because you took your first breath or because you first spoke God's name? And if you choose to die, And so then if you choose to die, is it because you took your last breath or because you quit speaking God's name? And that has always stuck with me. I mean, that's been 30 years ago. And it's like, so God's name is the breath. So every time you take a breath, you're speaking his name.
Which ties in beautifully with the Course in Miracles lesson, because instead of relying on your thoughts, just make your home in the breath.
Right.
Make your home in the breathing unity, as the interpretation of the first beatitude was from J.M. Right? Now is the ripe time to make your home in the breathing unity and let the fertile soil of the queendom birth your clear guidance. Rather than trying to figure it out with your conscious logical mind, make your home in the breath. Or, according
scary.
To Jeannie Rice, make your home in the name for God.
Right. It's a scary thought, though, to think that we die because we stop saying God's name.
Wow. There she goes, jumping into her drug of choice, fear, again. But let's just point out the denial really quickly. It is not scary. But you generated fear or resonated your fear when you had that thought. So I'm going to...
If I was bad.
If it's really well practiced in your system and it's sitting there, it can get resonated anytime you choose an interpretation for neutral life events that's in resonance with that energy. And you have a lot of fear
sure
energy sitting in your system. Yep. All right. So, blessings.
Thank you,
thanks
Dr.
for being
Tim.
Here. Have a great show.
Thanks. So, welcome everyone to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Friday, and it's July the 2nd, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael a moment to get dialed in. I hope everyone has a safe and wonderful 4th over the weekend. We are going to take my dad and go down to his farm tomorrow and just spend one night, but we're not going to do camping like my brother and some of the others are. But we do, my plan is, Dad has, counting himself, there are 5 children remaining alive out of 12, and all 5 of them will be down there this weekend, so Dad will get to see all of his siblings. So I'm excited about that. That's one of my main purposes. And so I hope everybody else stays safe, and I'm going to double-check that Michael's not having technical issues. Let me walk into the other room and make sure that he's dialed in.
I'm working on it.
So we will give him just another moment. So, yeah, Susan, I'm going to turn your microphone back on. That was a very powerful experience for me to think of it that way. But, you know, if you think back when it talks about the creation and mm-hmm. that he created man and then breathed into him the breath of life. So every mm-hmm. breath is like just speaking of God and being. And if you think, too, you know, every time you're startled or afraid or something, what do? We go, and we hold our
yeah.
breath. And
yeah.
if we can just stay conscious and aware and continue to breathe, and I think that our intelligence, our intuition and everything kicks into a higher space, and we're actually able to, you know, if there's a situation that we need a way out or whatever, then the information will be there. You know, if we hold our breath and it, we actually shut down. It's like putting blinders on. We have this tunnel vision. And so mm-hmm. breathing is definitely the key. And Michael has joined us. So welcome, Michael.
A few years ago, somebody gave me a birthday card, and the card read, always the same old thing, breathe, breathe, breathe. So it's definitely a part of the process. And
what we were talking about
I don't challenge
during the
connecting, so go ahead, share with me what's going on.
I was just going to say during the first hour, one of the conversations was what was the name of God, and so I shared going to that conference and the gentleman saying, you know, that his name was really not pronounceable. It was like the breath, and going on then to say, so are we alive when we're born because we took our first breath or because we first spoke God's name? And if we choose to die, is it because we took our last breath or because we quit speaking God's name? And so we were just talking about the importance of the breath. And
I don't
and
like
we
the
hold
idea
our,
of quitting speaking God's name. It's like
well,
we
it's
make
our
a choice.
We can keep on living. You know, Michael says we're eternal.
Well, yeah, that's been a sort of I don't concentrate too much on that one. That's too hard for me. I don't believe it.
Well, that's okay. There are lots of things you don't believe that happen anyway.
Well, I'm seeing evidence going in the other direction, too.
Oh, there's plenty of evidence for all kinds of lies. I'm agreeing with you 100%. I mean, I don't know anybody over 120 that's still alive, so that's pretty good evidence that everybody's dying. But does that mean it's fact? I question it.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the basis on which I question it. My background's in electronics with a side study in physics. In the world of physics, what they tell us is that everything is energy. Only energy exists. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It's eternal. Now, if we exist, and that's true, maybe science is wrong, but if we exist and that's true, then we must be energy. And if we are energy, we must be eternal. My thesis is that we have this integrated state called physiology. And, you know, they tell us really clearly back in the Aramaic scriptures, the wages of sin is death. Remember, sin being an archery term, it just says an energy is off the mark. So everything in that realm, every, you know, even little tiny word that we could think of that represents some variation on the theme of hostility or fear is the stuff death is made of. And if you put enough of that into an energy system that's made for life and there's not enough life there, then that system's going to start to wind down. Having watched all manner of disease disappear, when people start removing their sin, their energies that are off the mark, leads me to the conclusion that if we were to do that completely. Now, completely doesn't mean just, you know, what's gone on in my life. We're told that those quote-unquote sins, those energies that are off the mark, have been passed to us from four generations back. So, that, and, you know, nobody told me, I came to understand this, I don't even know at what point, probably 20 years ago in this work, maybe 30 even, I don't know. So I lived a lot of years not knowing that every thought, every piece of mind energy that I engaged in that was based in any form of hostility or fear was contributing to my death. I did a lot of years without a clue, and a lot of people have. Mm. So, and who knows the other story? Where do you hear the other story? So my offering is believe it, even if it doesn't happen, because even if it's not true, life's going to be a lot more fun because you'll be engaging in thoughts that are based in your true being in love rather than thoughts that are based in hostility or fear. And if you systematically begin to eradicate the thoughts based in hostility and fear, the thoughts based in sin, then you have to end up eternal. And then I go back and I listen to Yeshua in Revelations, and he says, to he or she that overcomes, they will not taste of the second death. They will become a pillar in the temple of my God, and was the temple but your body, and shall go out no more. I think we're going to stop killing ourselves when we start realizing that we're built for only one quality of energy and the rest doesn't belong. And one of the ways of telling what energy is moving is when that energy based in what the Aramaic called sin, the archery term off the mark, is moving in us, we disconnect from life. And how do we do that? Well, if you go to the original creation story, that creation story doesn't say God sent out his spirit. It says the creator sent out its breath. It's our direct connection. And just watch yourself and watch people how little they breathe, how little time they spend bringing in aliveness and love, and how much comes out of their mouths. And Yeshua says words are the key to life and death. The power of life and death are in them. Words based in hostility or fear set up frequencies that reflect through physiology and dissolve it, deteriorate it. Words based in life, in love, create a foundation for reinforcing, shoring up, and strengthening aliveness. Now, all of that put together seems like a pretty good thesis to me. And what I know is life's going to be a lot more fun, even if that's all a lie, and I do it. But if I don't believe it, and I believe the other stuff, then I go around doing my hostility and fear thing, and, you know, it may kill me where I don't need to do that. So, you know, at least we can entertain it, but the breath is certainly key to it. And, you know, it's interesting, Ruka Dikudsha, the term that replaces the Holy Spirit, when we put two ideas together, and I don't know how much we don't understand yet. You know, some of these ideas from the Aramaic, I've gone back to the, you know, I think you've got a copy of the book Enlightenment, don't you?
By whom?
You have the book Enlightenment? Enlightenment, the book we publish on the from the Kabbalists. The book is called Enlightenment from the first century Aramaic Kabbalists.
I don't know if I do, Michael.
Oh, well, we'll have to get you a copy. Anyway, I've spent hours just sitting reading some of those definitions to work on integrating them, and some of them I still can't remember. And I realized that the reason I still can't, I can't get it, I can't grok it. You familiar with the term grok?
Yeah.
So grokking something. Go ahead.
No, I say you, I've heard you explain that, but go on.
Well, some of them I still can't and don't grok fully. And what that tells me is there are still energetic patterns in my genes and in my structure that go against the truth. And I can't, you know, it's like I can't form it as a perceptual construct if I don't have the brain cells active for it. And I recognize that. And that's why I oftentimes just read it over and over and over again. And there's a whole section on the Holy Spirit, on Ruka Dikudsha. And it's nothing to do with this disembodied spirit being, but when we put that together, the root of it being the breath, there's this feminine elemental force, and it's like this is the best we can approach from our English dumbed down, Hostilian feared down language and brains that we can come up with, at least for me at this point, for this elemental force in us, that it is there to, when we count on it, when we invite it in, when we trust it, undo the effects of our errors and teach us the truth. I was doing some work. Jeannie was breathing the other night, and there are some moves you can do to open and relax the vagus nerve. So Jeannie's breathing away, and I move her head, and I ask her to move her eyes, and she goes into the space, and she starts to describe a tree with branches going into the ground. Well, this morning I pulled up a picture of the vagus nerve. Is that what you were looking at, honey? It was exactly what she was looking at.
Wow.
But she didn't know what the vagus nerve was. But she described it when she was doing that breath and doing those motions to soften and open. I mean, I could just see this. Well, you say what you saw, honey, instead of me trying to describe it.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, it was just like the roots going down into the ground and into the earth and just spreading out. There was just a lot of roots. And when he showed me that picture this morning, it's like the nerve coming down your neck, and then it just like spreads out into your body, and it's pretty awesome.
So, you know, ultimately we're counting on words to try and tell us something, but we really need to open that higher faculty of going direct to the thing itself and grokking it, and grokking definitions that other people have come up with. You know, other people who've worked with it with integrity gives us a deeper and deeper and deeper sense. But ultimately, again, the only teacher is the one within us. You're not going to get it from Michael Rice. You're not going to get it from Jeannie Rice. You're not going to get it from Tim Hayes. You're not going to get it from the Pope. It's not going to happen. But we can get clues. We can get support. We can touch the hem of their garment. We can tap into their energy fields that have a certain level of experience. And that's exactly what we're doing here through this radio show. And, you know, for me, you've heard me say it so many times, is please, please, please come ask your questions. Because when you do, I get to the touch into the hem of your garment, and I get a little bigger picture. I get a little deeper touch. I get to go to that other place. And then, you know, come back having had the experience, and let's try to put it into language. And as the Course in Miracles says, the truth can't be spoken in words. We're not talking about the truth here. Well, we are talking about the truth, and when I say about, I mean using that word accurately, around the edges, but we're not talking about the thing itself. That ultimately is what Rukh is going to bring to us. That's like the Creator's last step into us. It's like when we're ready, when we do our part, and the Course says, you know, your part is to return your mind to the point where the error was made and give it over. And when we do that, then Rukh Dukuncha, that elemental force that emanated through the universe from the Creator to us, that force for that which is proper for us when we're receptive and choose to be in alignment. And, you know, that I use that line all the time, that translation from the Lord's Prayer, what's called the Lord's Prayer, as, you know, open a space, carve out a space in me for your wholeness. That to me is, that's like one of my continuous petitions to the Creator. Like, I'm available. Here you go. Okay, if there's a part of me in resistance, I'll find out. You know, Susan's going to call and she's going to resonate it for me, and I'll go, there it is. Or Jeannie's going to give me the look, or, you know, whatever. And that's all our gifts.
Mm-hmm.
So when I can touch that, and the more human beings I can touch, seeing as how there's only one organism on Earth, it looks like 7.5 billion, it's taking some significant interaction to open all those spaces and really touch into that holy breath, that whole connected space, and beyond our, you know, what I consider to be inadequate translation of words from the first century Aramaic into English. She who undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. What is that power in us? And how do we prepare ourselves? Well, you know, it's like all of the above. Everything over the last 40 years, specifically of working with the Aramaic and the 10 years before that, everything that I can touch, that I can find, that comes into the process. And, you know, the next big piece may come from our next caller, or it may even be from you with the number of pieces you've given us over the years. And your willingness and your conversation and your sincerity of tapping in, doing your work, understanding, forgiving, you know, it's like, wow, what a gift.
So, Michael, this causes me to think about a walk I had with my son today. We've gotten into this thing where we go for these long walks.
All right.
And he was saying, I was talking to Dr. Tim about this. He was saying, one of the reasons it's so hard to leave medicine is because when I'm in surgery, I belong in there. I feel as if I belong in there. All my anxiety fades away, and I am focused, and I'm good, and he is.
On purpose, and Ruka is flowing.
Yeah, I help people, which is part of my purpose, but it's also, I feel as if I'm a musician who is giving, who has mastered the piece, and I'm in that zone, I'm in that space of absolute joy and ease. Mm. And if I could practice nothing, be a surgeon, you know, and go in there and do, I would do that. But there are so many other aspects and so much bureaucratic
right.
stuff and money mongering and misinformation
yep.
and unkindness. And
yep.
he said it's all like roadblocks. And Dr. Tim was telling me that he could find other ways to get that feeling. And I'm thinking, but that it's a nice idea, but that isn't his purpose, to have a great feeling. He just knows
right.
the rightness of his.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
So what I hear, you know, from my brain cells, and, you know, we can't recognize something if we don't have brain cells for it. So the brain cells that I have for that say, first, he's in alignment with his purpose. In alignment with his
yeah.
purpose, Ruka is moving in him.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out of that, and everything he has not resolved from carbon-based memory comes back online. One of the things that Gene and I are often talk about is like, so when we get to that opening, is to be careful to notice any and every signal that shows that the non-being mind is coming back online.
Oh, wow, that's incredible.
And hostility or fear is moving back
mm-hmm.
in. So maybe give him that peace. Okay, so there you are. You are in your perfect flow. Being is fully moving in him. So,
mm-hmm.
so, young man, watch when you step out of there what wants to come back online, and that's what you need to be forgiving. Because when it comes back online, when you're in that state and you know you have the brain cells to watch for hostility or fear coming back online, you can catch it. And when you can catch it, you can forgive it. If you're steeped in it, it's like – it's like, you know, well, gee, I'm in this dark room and everything's dark, so how do I catch another ray of darkness? It's like, ugh. But if I'm in light, I'm going to spot that ray of darkness, and I'm going to be able to go, okay, so what is that one? That's terror of not being approved of. Oh, my boss again, they want all that paperwork done. God almighty, throat closing up. Carbon-based memory coming back online. I'm going to be oppressed again in school. I'm going to be oppressed for not doing it all right, for not being smart enough, for not being good enough, whatever. So there's carbon-based memory from a six-year-old coming back online, interpreting what truth is for him. And as he realizes that and forgives it, he will disappear it. And when each piece he disappears opens the light on another level. You can't even have that. You know, if you look, if you watch, I mean, virtually everybody in the world is doing it. When was the last time you heard that conversation? Unless people have the brain cells, they can't see that that's what's happening.
Yeah.
And when we have the brain cells, we can talk about it, share it, extend it to other people, and other people go, oh, yeah, I got that. Cool. And that's what community's about, because everybody's got a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
So that would be my support for him is to let him know. And, of course, as you give him that piece of information, you'll get to observe in a more profound way when you're in that zone, when you're in that peak experience, and then carbon-based memory wants to come back online. And, you know, a few weeks ago I talked about the danger of the peak experience. When we're in that peak experience and we're, 100% empowered by the presence of love, what has to happen? Whatever is ready to move that's unlike love is going to have to start to come to the surface. Carbon-based memory is going to start to kick back in and suck us back into its story. And when it does, a perceptual, and this is why having the brain cells is so important, a perceptual construct takes over from that peak experience, and whatever was ready to come up and heal next then becomes the foundation of this person's next healing opportunity. But they call it a fact because, you see, I see this in my mind. This is what's true. And it's the next lie the mind needs to heal that now presents itself as true and needs to be forgiven and needs to be forgiven and needs to be forgiven and needs to be forgiven. How many times? 77 times 70, an infinite number of times till we're done with it. But if you don't have the brain cells for that, that's like, oh, well, I had this peak experience, then I went to hell. I went right into the pit, man. I was in depression and rage and fear. Oh, yeah, life is hell. Life is terrible. And that's just the next layer of what the peak experience, that the peak strength has given you the power to surface and look at and do the next layer of work. So you've got to be really careful with
really
mind's lies because they can be really convincing.
Mm-hmm. Boy.
I'm with you. Super important as well. And the indicator that one place or the other is what are we doing with Ruka Dukuja? When something like that comes, do we hold our breath? Which means carbon-based memory saying, I don't want to look. You know, remember that movie with the, what's his name, Tom Hanks in it?
Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. What's the ego mind? What's the non-being mind keep doing and saying to Mike, to Tom Hanks in that movie? Don't make me look. Don't make me look, and that's what holding the breath. Don't make me look. Jeez, I just opened to this beautiful space, and now everything comes flooding up to me. Don't make me look. But the most desirable thing is to look. The most necessary thing is to look, because when we clean all that gunk out, the only thing left is life, and life is eternal. The rest of it's a lie, and everybody's living in the lie. Like, I mean, think about it. In all, you know, you've had many decades of experience in the world, and so have I. Where did you ever find anybody that told you that forgiveness was about removing hostility and fear from your physiology and opening fully to your breath, to Ruka Dukuja? Who ever told us that?
Mm-hmm.
So what are 7.5 billion people, maybe 7.5 minus 2 billion people on the planet doing? And they're dying as a result of it. There's a reason they're dying. There's a reason we are dying. And if we reverse that, we will stop dying. Total 100%, period. That's my take.
Wow. Well, bringing it back to Jonathan, which, I mean, this is global, what you're saying.
he actually has, I think, what they call PTSD just from the dreadful circumstances in which he's working. However, even forgiveness, it would ease a tremendous amount, and maybe it would take care of all the burnout feelings and stress. Maybe it would. Maybe that's the main thing, is his interpretation of what's going on, no matter how horrendous it appears. And love to think that he could go back to medicine and be free. And his only thought now is, I have to leave, but I'm leaving behind something I love when I'm really doing it.
So the worksheet for him to do would be canceling his goal to stay.
Okay.
And ask him, you know, the question we ask often is, how does that look like your life? How has it looked like his life to feel like he has to leave? And how far back does that go? And I think the other day you described to us that it was about grade one.
Yeah.
That's how long that perceptual construct has been moving in him with great emotional trauma and pain.
Give up the goal, say again, give up the goal of having to stay or leaving?
Yes.
I already missed it.
Being able to stay, yep.
Give up the goal
and as
of
he starts,
being able to stay.
Right. And then what will happen is the file in his mind on staying, which at least that story you told us the other day about him as a kid in school, at least started there, if not before. And or maybe started with a woman we know named Orb, who was the source of his life, of the life of his physiology. Maybe there's one in there about her needing to get out and needing to leave. And maybe there's one about a mother to that mother who. I don't know where it started, but it sounds like a pretty strong construct in his mind, and as he starts to dissolve it, he'll make room for something else, and he'll step out of his peak experience and go, oh, I'm safe. Oh, I don't have to escape. I don't have to get out of here. I don't have to be under stress. I can, because all that stress is internal.
I know. Michael, I'm
here, where
sorry
Yeshua,
to do this.
Listen to Yeshua saying, be in this world, but not of it.
Can I ask you to repeat the goal that we're giving up? My brain is just going on static electricity. I'm not getting it.
Mm-hmm.
Give up the goal of
okay.
needing to leave.
To stay. No.
Needing
the goal to
stay.
Stay. Yes. The underlying, you know, here what you just shared is here he is in this state of bliss in surgery, knowing he's doing his purpose and the flow is there and he's breathing and Ruka is moving and he wants to stay there when he walks out of the operating room.
So it's
God, Mom, if I could just stay there, if I could just stay in that state, I'd go back and practice medicine forever and love it. When he cancels
right,
that goal, he's going to look at what's in his file on staying and get to clean it out.
I'm still confused. He's been talking
okay.
about
and so remember that confusion is one of the signs of healing. You're in a healing crisis right now because this isn't just his issue, it's your issue. That's
mm-hmm.
perfect. So go for it.
Okay, I think my question to you and his question to himself is, can I, should I leave medicine or stay? Now
right.
he's asking himself, you're creating a worksheet, I should say. You're creating a worksheet with a goal
yes.
of needing to stay in the state of bliss, not stay in the hospital as a doctor.
And or all of the above. It might be, you know, he might end up doing the goal to stay in that connected state when he was back in grade one with that teacher, which incidentally, if you look at it, that's what his son is dealing with Mr. What are we calling it? Gold bricking
gold.
Or gut
gold.
So notice that like father, like son, the energy is the same.
Could give up the goal of needing to stay with Mr. Gutgold.
Mm-hmm. Or to stay peaceful in the presence of Mr. Gutgold, or to stay peaceful when his mind starts to run that Mr. Gutgold program, his projection on Gutgold.
And you're giving up that goal.
Well, remember that the core of forgiveness is, I have this perception, this construct in my mind, and it's driven by a goal. Forgiveness looks like canceling that goal so that that construct will collapse. And when it collapses in on its own root, and you now have access to what's at the root of that trauma-based construct, that pain-based construct of the mind. And when you bring that root of that pain-based construct forward in the presence of active love, then it dissolves. Whatever gets exposed dissolves.
So, Michael, could you do me the favor of wording that as a mind shifter about Jonathan, not Gutgold and Charlie?
Sure. It's safe.
I think I'd understand it.
And healing.
Okay.
It's safe
yeah.
and healing and 100% possible for me, Jonathan, to
yep.
live fully in the state of bliss that I experienced in surgery.
Okay, well, that how would that help him with his decision about staying or leaving in the hospital?
Well, here's how it will help. The file in which he holds the trauma, and it may not be the only file, but we've now identified, if everything we're saying is accurate and true, and of course only he can tell us that, I can't, you can't, but if everything we're saying is on target, then he's got a file in his mind on staying. Grade one comes home from school. I want to be in school. I'd love to be in school, but this teacher and these kids and I don't feel right and I'm not in the right place. So if that's what he's carrying, and you might have some view on how many generations that's been going on, you know, that somebody's going to come in and disapprove of me or somebody's going to hurt me or put me down, or, you know, whatever it is. So the way you clean that file out is by looking at what goal today is driving my perception that's showing me that pain. And by collapsing it in on itself, I get access to the underlying content that needs to be cleaned up.
So if he collapses the goal...
Cancels the goal, collapses the perception.
Cancels the goal of staying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
And
all
you
right.
know, and there might be many entry points to this particular construct that his mind is doing. Another one might be, it ties back to the same issue. It might be being approved of. You know, I'm in surgery. I am so on. I know that it is so perfect. And nobody could tell me any different. Nobody can interrupt that man. I am there, and I am in peak moment, and it's rocking.
Yeah.
Then I walk out the door, and I wonder if somebody's going to come disapprove of me for some reason. Somebody's going to
yeah.
come put me down, or somebody's going to, quote, unquote, make me feel like I don't belong. And they would, so the next one might be, I cancel my need to be approved of. I cancel my need to be acceptable. I cancel my need to be accepted. I cancel my need to be good enough. You know, it could be 1,000 variations on the theme, that all support that underlying construct or that resulting construct.
Mm. When we were walking today, he said, you know, when I was on the Zoom call with Tim Hayes, he said more than once, wow, that's fodder for a worksheet. There's another worksheet. Mm-hmm. There's another worksheet. And Jonathan felt overwhelmed. And I said, I know that feeling. We all do, I'm sure. But it's also true. And Michael Rice has said this. Sometimes all it takes is one. And
yep.
many issues disappear. So,
collapse.
Yes, you
yeah.
keep doing them. And then maybe you keep doing them until there's this release. Or And we always have issues, but the major ones, I mean, don't get overwhelmed. I just said that isn't necessarily true. You do one, and it'll take you to a different place, and maybe the six other ones aren't really necessary anymore. I hope I said the right thing, but I didn't want him to give up.
Right. Well,
yeah.
You know, it's like if I'm going to drive a car down the road, everything about the car has to be in alignment and in order. It's a lot of pieces,
right.
You know, the tire pressure, the tires, the wheels, the brakes, the engine, the fuel supply, the oil supply, the generator, the alternator, all of it needs to be in harmony. And if it's not, then there's work to be done. Now, I remember a woman in a workshop back a couple of years ago. This goes back maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And she had a big complaint after the workshop. She's someone who was in her, I think, 50s, had been an alcoholic. If I remember correctly, maybe a prostitute too, I don't know, but like a heavy, heavy duty life. And
yeah.
She asked a question about a particular issue that was very broad. And, you know, and she said, well, what do I do? And she became very agitated and pointed her agitation at me. Of course, I know her whole life has been about agitation, but she pointed her agitation at me when my response was all of the above. Like, you know, if I've got a 40-year-old rickety car that I've driven for 400,000 miles and I haven't really taken care of it very well, and I take it to the mechanic, and I want it to run like a new car, the mechanic is going to say, well, you're going to have to fix the tires. You're going to have to redo the brakes. You're going to have to do the gas line. You're going to have to do the, you know, you're going to have to. And the answer they want, well, no. Just tell me the one thing I need to do. It's like, no, it's all of the above. And, you know, my analogy there for her was, lady, you've been doing drugs and alcohol for almost or maybe better than 50 years. And you're committed to being free of it and being done with it. And you want me to give you a one-point solution to this huge dilemma that you've just brought up. And you're going to get peeved at me because I can't say, if you do this, then you'll be done. No, lady, you're going to have to do all of the above. You're going to have to do your hostility, your fear, your family stuff, your kids stuff, your parents stuff. You're going to do all of that in order to get this thing back in A1 operating shape. It's just what's going to have to be done after 50 years of beating the hell out of it.
Mhm. Wow. Well, back to the overwhelm, but I get it. It's true.
And it can, and of course, someone whose core issue is overwhelm, then their 77 times 70 worksheets is going to be on overwhelm. And what's their healing process going to look like when they hit the new peak level? What's that healing crisis going to come? That's going to come next? Overwhelm. So they're going to do 77 times 70 worksheets on overwhelm. And the overwhelm might run into, you know, their work lives. It might run into their sex lives. It might run into their lives with their children. It might run into their lives with their parents. It's like, I'm an overwhelm about everything. Okay. So there's nothing overwhelming in the world. But if my mind holds a reality called overwhelm, I can put it on anything in the world. And everything. And if somebody's an overwhelm, they usually do. They put it on everything. if we come from a culture and a bloodline that's been abusing itself and pretty much everybody else forever, I mean, you know, in the last 70 years, we've killed over 170 million people on planet Earth in war. Who wouldn't be an overwhelm? You know, how many tens of millions of Native Americans? How many tens of millions of abused people from Africa? How many parents beating, abusing children sexually? I mean, on and on it goes. Yeah. We're you know, humanity at this point, or I should say non-humanity at this point, kind of like that car that's at 400,000 miles, and there's a lot of work to be done. So if I understand that, then I can start to let loose of this reality called overwhelm and just take, oh, here I have a piece of work in front of me. And, you know, I think that, you know, we had some significant discussion, and I think this ties in as well to your grandson and your son, is that OCD is just a form of overwhelm and trying to protect oneself from the consequences of that overwhelm.
Wow.
That's big stuff.
Yeah.
And how do you do it? You know, the same way you eat an elephant, one bite at a time. You do one piece of work at a time. Nobody can do it all at once. Nobody can.
Yeah.
And let's face it, you know, pretty much made a mess of it globally. Pretty much made it. I mean, there's some people doing really well, you know. In the pandemic, the top 10 billionaires in the country added, I forget exactly how much, something like $70 or $80 billion to their wealth. Hey, they're rocking. They're doing pretty well. But the average Joe is afraid that when these rent, moratoriums are canceled, that they're going to get thrown out of their homes. That's what the average person, a lot of people are doing. You know, that's a mess. I mean, that's in the wealthiest country in the world that's handed out billions and billions and billions of dollars to corporations who are wealthy, making billions of dollars, while people are starving. That's a mess. It's insane. Mm-hmm. What have we done? What are we doing? And it's a lot to handle. So what do? I take the piece of work I have to do now, and I do that piece of work. And I let the rest go because I can't do it all. If I try to do it all at once, I'm not going to get any of it done. I mean, you know, one of the issues you brought up oftentimes is plastics. I mean, it's insane. I mean, what leads us to this disaster where there are islands the size of, I don't know, Prince Edward Island of plastics floating out in the ocean? I mean, how bizarre is that?
I know.
Well, let's handle that all today. We're not going to handle it all today. And I could get very disturbed and think my disturbance is about us not handling that all today. But the truth is my disturbance is about my disturbance. And the first thing I need to do, if I'm ever going to affect change there, is handle my disturbance and be at peace. In fact, I'm going to send you another song title. Actually, I'm going to reach over.
Oh, thanks
my other
for the
phone.
Other one, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And recognize that, just a second here, I learned a little bit how to do this a little faster the other day. You know, this is the request to send to Rooka.
This world is so full of grief. I cannot swim in these waters. Beloved,
That's why we were given Rucka to Kutcha, to bring the conversation back full circle. Because we can't do it on our own.
I don't know if we're just sitting in silence or if you're on mute.
I think we're just,
but who is the author?
I think we're just in silence,
that?
Sweetheart. Okay, it's on our playlist. You can find it in your phone there. It's Peter Kater.
Okay.
K-A-T-E-R. And the song is Carry Me. There's a second, the woman's voice is Snatam Kaur, S-N-A-T-A-M. K-A-U-R.
Okay, I got it.
Okay. So how are you doing, Susan?
Doing fine. Thanks for the song. It comes across very roughly. I'd love to hear it again if you can send the link
I'm actually, I'm putting a link into WhatsApp, so it'll be there for everybody.
Oh, great. Thanks. Yeah, Jonathan, the other day, he said, I cannot do this by myself. So I said, well, you've got a lot of help available. So he has been talking to Holy Mother, his chosen ideal, who is like, oh, it's a long story. But anyway, she came to him in a dream and gave him some days of peace. It's God in the form that he can relate to. So, and it's feminine too, which I always like.
Sweet. Well, I'm going to send you a second tune. Why is this coming across? It's called Holy Mother.
Oh,
that
wow.
You will probably also enjoy, yes. So it is in the codependence, the inner penance, a link to it. And I'm going to go back and find Holy Mother, which is just awesome.
What is that? Who is Holy Mother in that song?
It is, some of the guitar working is just awesome. Actually, the title of it is, let's see. No, wait a minute. Where is that song? me a second here. I'm just looking through my playlist. Let me just look here. I may actually have... I think it's Eric Clapton. No, that's a different song. I wish there was a way that we could play music through this show with perfect clarity, with all the beautiful subtleties that go with the instrumentals and such. But anyway. So he'll probably love this one. It's really powerful. Holy Mother. It's Pavarotti and Eric Clapton. Pavarotti kicks in.
Yeah, it's hard to tell on there, but I
yeah.
look forward to listening to it.
Yeah, they're both in Spotify, and so I'm sending Spotify links to the WhatsApp Codependence Intensive group. So they're both there.
Great, thank you.
It is great. It is wonderful, and I'm delighted that you're here holding the space and doing the work and sharing the work and you know, just what a gift to your family. What a blessing. Just so awesome.
Well, it's
so we've got about
it.
Go ahead.
It's wonderful to have the work. But I do have to do worksheets on being a little bit panicked because I found you guys and the work so late. Of course, it was in the Course in Miracles would say it, you found it at the perfect time. But I have to trust that everything will be all right.
Well, if you're eternal, what's it matter?
Yeah.
And maybe you want to do a worksheet or two and get rid of that other lie about death. Just, you know, like, be done with it. Give it up.
Sorry, Michael, I'm outside and there's an airplane. Would you repeat, please?
I say, and maybe just do a worksheet or two and just throw away that lie about death. Like,
yeah.
Get done with that one. And put on your calendar, you know, you have an invitation. We have a New Year's party, January 31st, 49, or pardon me, December 31st, 49, 49. Golly, I give you the wrong date and you show up a month late. That wouldn't be good, would it?
Yeah, what are you going to do after that, Michael?
Punt. Follow guidance. Live, you know, like we were created to live as human beings. So I breathe with you. I enter Rukka with you. Are we alive because we first spoke God's name? Do we die because we stopped speaking God's name?
To stop speaking it. So there's the
I'm
answer.
With you. All right. Well, we are down to the last minute or so, so I'm going to say thank you for your questions and the processing and the willingness and the courage. And I think this will be we'll put this on one of our special shows because it's an opener for many people, I think, because we're all in this together. And we appreciate you and everybody. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Give it away.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. As we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness, we are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.